For many who have been watching, Netflix making a murderer series about Stephen Avery's conviction for killing photographer Teresa Halbach. The documentary series raises more questions about the process leading to the conviction of Avery than answers questions about his guilt. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk this hour with a Manitowoc County prosecutor who says Avery is guilty of murder, but who also says there is much we can learn from a close look at Avery's long history with the criminal justice system. Our guest talks about Avery's wrongful conviction of rape. He played a role in Avery's exoneration from that rape, and Avery's later murder conviction, and what may be ahead as more people call for another look at the evidence. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Have you been watching Making a Murderer on Netflix? Why or why not? What impressions do you have if you have watched it? Has it raised questions for you about the criminal justice system or even Stephen Avery's guilt? What questions do you have for our guest about how Avery's story has unfolded? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. More than a few of you have requested that we do a show on this documentary series, Making a Murderer. We did do a show with our criminal justice reporter, Gilman Halstead, when the series was just released, and now you want to hear a follow-up. Will this series do anything? Will this in any way impact this case? Let me welcome our guest. Michael Griesbach is a prosecuting attorney for Manitowoc County. He has been since 1991. He serves on the advisory board of the Wisconsin Innocence Project, and he is author of The Innocent Killer, a true story of a wrongful conviction and its astonishing aftermath. He was consulted on and interviewed by the filmmakers of the Making a Murderer documentary series. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot for being here. Well, this is let's try to put this into some perspective here. You started when you became assistant district attorney for Manitowoc County in 1991. This was after his conviction for rape, but before all the rest of this.
Correct. The conviction for rape, his wrongful conviction was in 1985. So about 6 years before I got here. And his exoneration was in 2003, so whatever that is, I guess that's about 12 years after I was here.
Yeah. And what role did you play in his exoneration?
Well, I was kind of the point person when we got the call from the Wisconsin State Crime Lab indicating that the last shred of evidence in the original 85 case, the attack on the beach, of Penny Burnson, who has been an advocate about wrongful convictions and all kinds of things since that, which is another kind of a triumph instead of a tragedy in this case. But anyhow, I, after receiving the telephone call from the crime lab and the information that it was actually the DNA came back to Gregory Allen and not Stephen Avery, I looked through the file very carefully along with a colleague to determine that, you know, it wasn't just on the strength of this one last shred of evidence, a hair recovered 1985, 18 years earlier. We wanted to make sure that we weren't going to release Stephen Avery without making darn sure that the rest of the evidence wouldn't have somehow trumped that evidence to suggest that Stephen Avery actually, you know, was involved. Reviewing the file, box of files, really, we knew nothing about the case or very little about the case, but reviewing it, it became apparent very quickly, reading through, you know, 16 alibi witnesses and the sketchy information that they used to convict, and even troubling information where, to me, as a long-term prosecutor, it looked like they either knew or should have known that it wasn't Mr. Avery at some point and should have proceeded against Mr. Allen. So once we determined that, it was an easy call to quickly work with Keith Finley, who I've since become friends with, essentially, and worked with on various issues, to sign a stipulation and an order releasing Mr. Avery as soon as possible. And he was released. I think, as most of, you know, the folks who watched this in Wisconsin remember, the footage, a week later, you know, on a fall day from Stanley Correctional, walking out of prison arm in arm with his, I think it was his daughter and maybe his sister.
Yeah, I certainly remember it well. So, yeah, he spent 18 years in prison for this rape. He did not convict. He did not commit. And then what?
Well, you know, it's a small enough community. Excuse me, Manitowoc County, it's about 70,000 total. That you run into people, but even before I ran into Mr. Avery in a couple unrelated events, a trial I did and a deposition in the wrongful conviction lawsuit where he was there and I was deposed, there were some really troubling, more troubling things that came to my and my colleagues' attention within the next week or two, I'd say. Information that really kind of confirmed my initial reaction when I read the police reports that, and the file, the jury trial transcript, that something, you know, was horribly wrong here. And it turned out we were right. I mean, this wasn't just one of those accidental wrongful convictions that maybe an overzealous prosecutor, you know, looked past something that he should have saw, or he or she should have saw. It was much more egregious than that. It was one of those rare cases, I think, when, you know, despite the Attorney General's conclusion, this was, you know, prosecutor misconduct, I would say. I've said it before, and so have many others. It was holding back on exculpatory information. Worse than all of that, it was likely a knowing and intentional wrongful conviction of an innocent man. And knowing, by the way, at the same time, who the real assailant was, you know, about as bad as it gets.
So it wasn't just an eyewitness was determined it was Stephen Avery, and that's what convicted him.
No, the eyewitness, Penny, the woman who was attacked viciously on the beach, the identification was what we in the law I think it's an easy call, unduly suggestive. In fact, it was worse than that. The circumstances, and while Kelly and Steve Glenn, who with Dean Strang and I and Penny, have given a bunch of presentations on this in Milwaukee and Green Bay, they go further than I do, frankly, Walt and Steve. I mean, it's almost as if they looked at the mugshot, the artist sketch, the police artist sketch, on his very first sketch, looked at the mugshot of Mr. Avery that was brought up to the hospital by the sheriff personally, who was a friend of the Burnsons. And we got Avery, who was already on the radar of the sheriff's department. So they bring up the mugshot. Sheriff sticks it in his pocket. The artist sketch, the artist, the detective looks at it. And basically he either saw it and then drew the composite sketch off of it, working with Penny a little bit, who was, you know, still bloodied and bruised and traumatized by all this. So that's how the identification started, you know. Here's your assailant, essentially. And then that becomes, in Penny's mind, her assailant for the rest of her life, frankly. When she closes her eyes now, she sees Stephen Avery. She can't get Gregory Allen into her head as the assailant, the way the mind works. Psychologists will tell you the same. And they actually told the jury in the Avery trial back in 1985, there was a psychologist from, I think it was a UW-Madison, Harvard-educated psychologist and forensic scientist, and maybe a lawyer, all that together, talked to the jury back then about how memory works and how if you see something after it's suggested to you, say, by police, and you see a picture, that changes or affects your memory so that everything going forward is affected by that. So it was a horrible identification procedure followed by a lack of courage, frankly, in getting rid of the case once they found it wasn't him and going after the right guy.
So talk a little bit more about that. You say that this this rape conviction was not just a mistake, an honest mistake, that it was deliberate misconduct to convict him.
I always preface this by saying, excuse me, that when we took the case to the Attorney General, Ty Glattenschlager, for an independent review after we got all this information and other information, too, that we can go into, that's even worse, frankly, in 2003, they did an investigation. And if you read the first 15 pages of the report they filed 6 months later, you'll be shocked by what the police did. Specifically, not all the police, but the sheriff, the district attorney at the time, the sheriff at the time, and they're named in the book, and frankly, I'm going to name them. I'm not, you know, there's a Dean Strang also always points out that, you know, it doesn't necessarily do good to cast stones or to punish people. We want to learn from it. But on the other hand, it's because of what these guys did that this county is going through what it's going through now, that the Halbachs are going through what they're going through now, and that Penny is going through what it's going through now, and frankly, the whole justice system in this area and arguably beyond. The injustice of these guys 30 years ago has festered till today. And it's really caused havoc over the years. For one thing, as Keith Finley of the Innocence Project is fond to point out, for every wrongful conviction, the real assailant goes free. It's exactly what happened here. And Mr. Allen, Gregory Allen, the true assailant, who viciously attacked Ms. Burnson on the beach and who was being followed by law enforcement and who law enforcement of another agency went to the sheriff and said, look, we think you got the wrong guy, and who the district attorney's staff at the time said to the DA, look, we think you got the wrong guy, and the DA says, nope, I checked, or the sheriff checked, the guy's on probation, that is, Mr. Allen's on probation, and he told me there's an alibi, an airtight alibi, so it couldn't have been Mr. Allen. Well, guess what? The AG's report determined that Mr. Allen was never on probation. So, you know, the report comes out with these horrendous facts, and you're reading it, you're thinking, my goodness, you know, did they really do this? I don't care if it's Mr. Avery, you know, did they really do this? But you get to the conclusion, and it's almost as if, you know, the politicos got a hold of it, the last two paragraphs. The conclusion is, you know, it's a whitewash, frankly, and it says something like, no ethical, no criminal violations on the part of the sheriff or DA. Instead, it's closed-mindedness and maybe a lack of communication between police agencies. Yes. So I preface my remarks to protect myself, frankly, by saying the official conclusion of the Wisconsin Attorney General in 2003 was that there was really no intentional wrongdoing on the part of the sheriff and the DA. Not what would have been brought out in the $36 million wrongful conviction lawsuit against Manitowoc County, against the sheriff and the DA personally, before Mr. Avery's actions diminished the value of that case to the extreme.
We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we will talk with Michael Griesbach about making a murderer and the police procedures used in investigating the murder of Teresa Halbach and the questions that are raised by this Netflix documentary series about Stephen Avery's conviction for that murder. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll find out why our guest, a Manitowoc County Assistant District Attorney, says that he does believe Avery is guilty of this murder. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Michael Griesbach. He has been a prosecuting attorney for Manitowoc County since 1991. He is the author of The Innocent Killer, A True Story of a Wrongful Conviction and Its Astonishing Aftermath. He was consulted on and was interviewed by the filmmakers of the Making a Murderer documentary series, which is taking the country by storm. And we're wondering if if you have watched this or heard about this and what you think about this, what questions you might have, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So as mentioned, Michael Griesbach, you were consulted on the Netflix documentary series about Avery's rape exoneration and then the subsequent murder trial for the murder of photographer Teresa Halbach. Some who have watched this series have come to the conclusion that Avery needs a new trial, that he might have even been set up by law enforcement. How do you think making a murderer represents that story and evidence?
First of all, I agreed to be interviewed way back when they did this 8 years ago, because I think what they were trying to do is similar to what I was trying to do in my book, which is this. It was to draw lessons for the criminal justice system. You know, it's a system badly in need of reform. And some of the issues they brought up, including the uphill battle that folks in a lower socioeconomic background like the Averys have in the criminal justice system, including interrogations that police use all over the country that are being questioned, rightfully so. And I'm talking about Mr. Dassey's mm-hmm. confession, including what happened in the first Avery case and how, you know, wrongful convictions are real and they cause all kinds of harm. I forgot to mention Mr. Allen, 10 years after he wasn't prosecuted by the police and the prosecutor at the time of Mr. Avery's wrongful conviction, entered a residence in Green Bay, an apartment, and brutally raped the woman inside. He's still in prison for that. That wouldn't have happened but for the wrongful conviction of Avery, because they basically knew, in my opinion, who the real guy was. So, you know, they had really important lessons to bring out, and the Avery case is an opportunity to use to bring out these other issues. But where I think they went astray, in my opinion, and despite their denials, of trying to affect anything or of being agenda-driven and one-sided in their narrative, that's exactly what they did. I mean, I could go through 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, mm-hmm. what they did not show or what they sort of manipulated in terms of how it was presented, but that trumps the good that it otherwise did, in my opinion. You know, other people disagree with that.
But we might go into some of those specifics as I see calls are lining up with some of those types of questions, but why are you convinced of Avery's guilt?
Well, you got to, you know, step back and look at the basics like you do in any, you know, trying to figure out the truth. So the context is that Mr. Avery had, you know, on a previous incident, showed up wearing only a towel when Teresa Halbach was there and creeped her out. She told friends that. When he called for her on this day, he specifically asked for her in a phone call. But when I think it was a call to her, he star, what is it, star 97? My kids know what it is.
67 or something, yeah.
Okay. Well, when you leave your identity, he left a callback number in the name of his cousin, who's a woman. So, you know, right off the bat, he's specifically asking, and it said, send the girl, could you send the girl, as he said, mm-hmm. who came out last time. And then he's misidentifying himself. So you got that. Then you got, he's the last known person to see her. So you start thinking, okay, you know, that doesn't prove a thing, but it's where you start looking, you know. And then you find this. You find blood in the car, and I understand all this is deemed to have been or suggested that it's all been planted, which is pretty tough when you start adding it all up. His blood in her car, her key with his DNA on it in her room, a bullet, which they don't even mention in the documentary, by the way, a bullet found in his garage that Lincoln Colburn had nothing to do with finding, nor did any other Manitowoc County officer have anything to do with that search other than Remaker, the lieutenant, putting on the evidence transmittal to the crime lab his name, which they zoom in on in the documentary. So they find this bullet. Calumet County cops or state cops, I don't even know who it was, DCI cops maybe, but it wasn't Manitowoc County cops, find in Stephen Avery's garage where Brendan Dassey said he shot her a partial bullet or casing or whatever it is of, it's a bullet, partial bullet with Teresa Halbach's DNA on it. That's left out. Then you add some stuff where you know about him prior to this. You know, if you all have followed or the listeners have followed it, Jody Stokowski's recent statement that he beat her often before this happened, and she felt basically intimidated to make him look good on the documentary. You add that he had drawn diagrams of a torture chamber in prison prior to this and talked to inmates about, assaulting, torturing, and then killing women. This is a dynamite case for a prosecutor. If it weren't for the ability of the defense, and they did a great job, and they're doing their job, frankly, by casting reasonable doubt in the only way they could, by saying the evidence was planted. And what gave them the chance to do that is what happened in 1985. That's why I say an injustice festered for 30 years. And this is just the latest injustice, kind of how I present it in the book.
Yeah, we are talking with Michael Griesbach. He is the author of The Innocent Killer, A True Story of a Wrongful Conviction and Its Astonishing Aftermath. He is an assistant district attorney for Manitowoc County. And what a title of your book, The Astonishing Aftermath, was also before the Making of a Murderer. That's not what you're talking about, is it?
No, my book came out a couple years before, summer of 2014, and the American Bar Association came up with The Innocent Killer title. I had the rest of it, Astonishing Aftermath, and the Astonishing Aftermath was a lot of things, but it was, the real astonishing part was the murder. There's the wrongful conviction, that's the innocent part, and then there's the murder, and that's of Teresa Halbach, and that's the killer part. So I think they hit it on the head, the innocent killer.
Well, we have Gary on Facebook says, I'm thinking the title of the documentary should be changed to Making a Murderer Appear Innocent. Do you agree?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, the cat burning incident, they passed that off as he was horsing around with friends and the cat kind of accidentally ended up in the fire. In fact, Stephen Avery pled guilty when he was 22 years old to cruelty, animal cruelty, mistreatment of animals. He doused the cat with gasoline and threw it in the fire. So they're presenting him a certain way. One other thing, the incident that Stephen Avery, rammed his pickup truck into the woman's car, and a woman who was his neighbor and really didn't like him, so that presentation was true. But they said it was he did this just because she was spreading rumors about him and his family. In fact, and he pled to this offense, too, by the way, in 6 of his 18 years he would have served anyhow for this offense. He rammed his pickup truck into her car. She lost control. He held her at gunpoint with a rifle. Only let her go because her baby was in the back seat. And it, as usual in Wisconsin, if you watch Making a Murderer, it was colder than you know what. I mean, it was like, January. And he begged her to let her go. And he did. But prior to that, he had been watching her, stalking her, essentially, for weeks, even earlier that summer, months, with binoculars as she'd get into her car. He would, for lack of a better term, sexually gratify himself as she drove her car past his house. Mm-hmm. One time he even ran into the road naked in front of her. Now, there's something when you see the facts like that, and then you see how they were presented in the Avery story, and I get that it's that it's drama and that it's okay to have a perspective and that they did a lot of good things. But I don't get it acting like it's an objective portrayal.
Yeah. We have lots of callers, and I want to get to it, but I did want to also point out, for those who aren't completely familiar with this whole situation, which is kind of complicated, some might say, well, of course a Manitowoc County prosecutor is going to defend the conviction of Stephen Avery. There was a special prosecutor, wasn't there, for this case? And even Manitowoc County Police were not supposed to be investigating it.
There were some huge mistakes, and we sent it to a special prosecutor. Of course, he wanted it, Mr. Kratz, but, Teresa was from his county, and they had already been interested. Looking back, the instruction from the sheriff to the police was never be alone when you search. Always have Manitowoc County cops. You must have a cop from a different jurisdiction with you. Lincoln Colburn, by the way, did have another cop with them. Now, you know, making a murder didn't present the rebuttal of that cop. That officer or the state's cross-examination. So they made it look the worst, like he said something like, well, it's possible they planted the key. But the rest of it wasn't there, and they called that cross-examination and rebuttal the truth-seeking machinery of a jury trial. So that kind of tells you something, too. But, yeah, I'm not saying they didn't mess up. They never should have been anywhere near the Avery salvage yard after her body was found. Certainly not searching key areas like her bedroom. Calumet County is a small police agency, though. It's a lot smaller than Manitowoc. And, you know, it's a huge area to search. So, you know, it's easy to look at this and say X, Y, Z, but, and they shouldn't have been there. I'm not saying that. But, yeah, I think that's part of what was at play here.
Let's go to the phones. Richard in Whitewater is with us. Hello, Richard.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for continuing with this program. I watched the Netflix, and I have a big question. In the Netflix, it was shown that in the bedroom where Teresa Halbach was stabbed and slashed with a knife, there was no sign of blood in that room. And then in the garage where she was apparently shot, there was no sign of blood spatter in the garage and on all the implements that were there. Now, how can you explain that?
It's Richard, right?
Richard? Yes, it's Richard.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as my wife and kids and I are watching it, and even before that, those are totally legitimate questions. It seems to defy common sense. I will say this. They had like 4 or 5 days before the police found the car. To clean up, Brendan Dassey there was bleach on his pants. The bleach and I think some bleach there presumably could have been used to clean it up, although I think they had a different explanation for that. The bullet with her DNA was found in the garage. It does seem to, you know, it makes people really scratch their head. I'm not a forensic expert. You would think something would be there, but we often think physical evidence should be there when it's not, especially, 4 or 5 days to clean up. The CSI effect, where they come in and they find something every time, fingerprints. Well, fingerprints not hardly ever, but are rarely found. But you're right. I mean, it is hard to kind of fathom how, with that kind of brutality, there wouldn't be blood or anything or hair or something around. And with this, they're right, the Netflix documentary. Truth is elusive in the Stephen Avery case. It always was from the beginning. I guess my point is, though, you don't get any closer to the truth by presenting an agenda-driven narrative that leaves out stuff like I was talking about before. So all good questions. And frankly, if we learn one thing from this thing from the very beginning, careful about being overly certain about anything. And law enforcement and prosecutors, it's an occupational hazard. You know, we think we know what's right. And in the first Avery case, especially, they weren't even certain, much less did what's right. But that's even when you're not trying to do anything wrong, I think human nature is such that you start kind of owning your own opinion, and then you look at things in that light. And so they're right about truth being elusive in the Stephen Avery case, but they're not right about trying to skew the truth, in my opinion.
Let's go next to Jamie in Mineral Point. Hello, Jamie. What's your question?
Yes, Joy. It's my understanding that Calumet County searched Stephen Avery's bedroom multiple times and didn't find anything. And then Manitowoc County came in and discovered the ignition key to Teresa Halbach's car. I wonder if you could touch on that.
Sure. Let me preface it by saying I don't believe the two officers planted the key. But having said that, okay, it is not entirely inconsistent or inconsistent at all, and this is not an excuse in the you know 0.05% in my mind chance they did that. But it doesn't mean Teresa Halbach didn't kill Teresa Halbach. I mean, it doesn't mean Stephen Avery didn't kill Teresa Halbach. You just need to think through that, okay? But after you think through that, you're right. It looks horrible, and they never should have been in there. And why didn't the earlier cops find it? Well, you know, whether they were cursory searches, whether they were searches that they didn't actually, you know, pull the bookcase out from the wall. You know, I don't know that. I don't believe it's accurate the way they showed it, that the bookcase was empty and there was the key, as if the key was in there the whole time. The bookcase, my understanding, is full of books, you know. And police, you know, Link and Coburn are good detectives. They've been around a long time. They also misrepresented their role in the earlier case. You know, they tried to tie Link and Coburn's activity in the wrongful conviction case. Well, Link and Coburn weren't even parties. They weren't sued in the wrongful conviction case. They were witnesses for what happened in 1995. These guys weren't even around in the wrongful conviction case. But in 95, you know, when they received a call from the Green Bay Police Department saying, hey, we got this guy named Gregory Allen, and he's saying he did this crime that you guys have had another person in custody for. Link and Coburn were like, one was a CO, a corrections officer, and one was a lower-level deputy. They happened to get the call. And they did just what they should. They put it, you know, put the information up the chain of command. And it came down from, I assume, the sheriff, the same sheriff who wrongly convicted Avery 10 years earlier. Forget about that. We got the right guy, you know. So they've been just drugged through the mud nationally. And, you know, they've been convicted, all but convicted by this documentary, of the worst kind of police conduct you can imagine. I mean, it's obstruction of justice. It's misconduct in office. It's whatever you want to call it, if it's true. But they ought to be fair about, you know, whether it is true and present everything so people can decide.
We are talking with Michael Griesbach. He is a Manitowoc County prosecutor, assistant district attorney for Manitowoc County. And he is weighing in on the Stephen Avery case and the Netflix documentary series, Making a Murderer. He says there is still much we can learn from a close look at Avery's long history with the criminal justice system. He does believe that Avery is guilty of murder for killing photographer Teresa Halbach, even though he was not guilty of a rape that he spent time in prison for. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org if you have a question or something you would like to bring up. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Michael Griesbach. He is a prosecuting attorney for Manitowoc County since 1991, serves on the advisory board for the Wisconsin Innocence Project, is the author of The Innocent Killer, a true story of a wrongful conviction and its astonishing aftermath. He was consulted on and was interviewed by the filmmakers of the Making a Murderer documentary series. He believes that the documentary makers went overboard and only presented one side of the evidence. And he's telling us why he thinks Stephen Avery is guilty about this, but still thinks that this case is bringing up many questions that need answers. We have Matt who emails, "My family and I vacation in Manitowoc and Two Rivers nearly every weekend in the summer. But after seeing the actions of the Manitowoc County Sheriff's Department, I no longer feel safe being in that county. Attempts to bring these concerns to the Manitowoc County Executive have been met with unprofessional responses. Is there somebody who should be held accountable for the concerns about the actions of Manitowoc County officials?" Michael Griesbach, why are you, maybe respond to that, but also why you are convinced that there wasn't wrongdoing on the part of the investigators or prosecutors the second time around when you believe there was the first time around?
Because the facts are, every case is fact specific, and you have to try to objectively look at where the truth leads you. And I think I come with some credibility because, first of all, I'm the Innocence Project, I'm on their board, and I'm a prosecutor. And second of all, I wrote a book that didn't hold back on its opinion about the wrongdoing of the folks, the people in authority, the sheriff and the DA, and probably a handful of, you know, a couple other people, including the composite sketch artist, that this was a horrific wrongful conviction, okay? So I come to the table, I think, with some credibility. What we're supposed to do, and what most prosecutors do, is look at the evidence objectively and try to figure out the truth. And I think 90% of prosecutors or more do that. And they're well-intended, and we're working in a system that's tough, and they would never do anything like what happened here. Same with the police. So we have a different set of characters, cast of characters now. The sheriff's long gone. The DA's long gone. The police officers who are accused of this had nothing to do with the case in 1985. So I draw that conclusion because I think it's what the facts show. Now, a jury drew the same conclusion, and they chewed on it. You know, they wrestled with it. It's not like Avery didn't present a great defense with excellent lawyers. It took them, I think, 3 days. So, you know, certainty is a funny thing, you know. So how certain am I? I have no doubt, not just a reasonable doubt. I have no doubt about Mr. Avery's guilt, but I guess it's that some people think that misses the point, and it might. But for the fellow who's worried about coming here because of tourism and who should be held accountable, I think you look back to 1985 to see who should be held accountable, not the people here, especially Lincoln Colburn, who are the last two guys you would expect. Decent men, both of them, committed to their lives for, you know, their whole career to law enforcement. And then at the time of trial, you know, headlines all over the country, corrupt planting evidence. Their children see that. They now get threats. Colburn got a threat on Christmas Day at home, a telephone call. Colburn got something in the mail that was suspicious. Jim Link, lucky for him, is retired and gone. So, yeah, don't worry about coming to Manitowoc County. That was then. This is now. Enjoy Manitowoc County. You know, it's not always colder than hell here, like the Netflix documentary suggested.
And I have spent many a summer at Point Beach in that area. So
beautiful.
Molly on Facebook says, Stephen Avery, questionable guilt. Brendan Dassey, clearly not guilty. He's the one I feel bad for. His confession was obviously him just guessing what the police wanted him to hear because he wanted them to leave him alone. He wanted to be back to school for sixth hour for his project, for goodness sake. Where's the petition for him? You mentioned that you do believe that that confession that was derived from Brendan Dassey was questionable.
I should be careful. What I believe is it was that it troubled a lot of people was completely reasonable. And that, frankly, was troubling to me. I wasn't aware of all the details of it. And that is an issue that's in a court of law right now, in the federal court in Milwaukee. And that's an issue the court is wrestling with. I don't know when their opinion is due out. But, yeah, I mean, I don't weigh in on the Dassey case, frankly. There's two questions, though, whether his confession was coerced and whether the confession was false, which is kind of a subtle difference. But there is such a thing as false confessions, counterintuitive as they are, that people confess, especially with a young man like this. You know, that technique, that interrogation technique, it's called the Reed, R-E-I-D technique, named after some guy in Illinois, a former police officer, maybe a psychologist or something. And it's used all across the country. And its aim is not so much to find the truth. Its aim is to confirm what the police already think they know. So it's okay to trick, it's okay to manipulate, it's okay to lie, it's okay to, you know, use sympathy to get someone to confess. And that is troublesome, and probably the courts need to look at that, and maybe the media, too. One more thing, good thing, that, you know, that can come from this documentary.
Let's go to Kelly in Milwaukee. Hello, Kelly.
Hey, my question was, and it's you kind of touched on this a little bit, but almost every concern that comes up, you say, oh, I understand the question there, or yes, I don't know why there wasn't any blood or whatever. And even the jury, there were seven, I think, in the beginning that thought he was not guilty at first. So they had some doubt. So my question is, what's the harm in opening this back up and looking at all of those question marks that are still there and now millions of people in the country also have? What would be the harm in relooking at this?
Well, I guarantee the defense attorney, the new defense attorney from Chicago, is going to try to do just that. So whether the court, you know, what's the harm in the court granting a new trial is another question. There's a law on that. You know, it's newly discovered evidence that they didn't know at the time, and that would decrease confidence in a jury's verdict given all the other evidence to the point where maybe it's the verdict's not right.
Let me jump in. So there's no new evidence that was that has come to light with this series, is there?
I don't believe anything in the Making a Murderer series was not known to the defense. Mm-hmm. You know, what they are looking at now and what comes up, who knows? You know, it's not that anybody is prohibited or should be prohibited by coming back to court and saying, look, this stuff we didn't know about, and given that, you know, he should get a new trial. But there's a burden, and there should be a burden, before someone just gets a new trial. You know, think of what that does. If every trial is based on a documentary is subject to review and retrial, the system won't work, number one. The victims, I mean, lost in all of this white noise about all this other stuff, you know, did this happen, did that happen, which is all relevant. But lost in all of it is the Habach family.
Yeah.
Totally, you know, I'm sure if it weren't for their, you know, their faith and their dignity and their strength, devastated all over again. I mean, now you've got a situation where the whole world or whoever watched this documentary, which are legions of viewers, not just in the United States, they doubt that their daughter's convicted murderer is actually guilty. And they think, the world thinks, that Stephen Avery is actually a really nice guy. So, you know, we just got to kind of step back and let the law, let the courts figure out where this goes from here. Not a Netflix documentary that's kind of like a docudrama, more than a documentary, as well as it raises important points. And it should point the finger at the police the first time and the prosecutor. Not all the police, but the sheriff. But it should be fair in examining the second case if it wants to call itself journalism.
Yeah, and again, Stephen Avery's new attorney has filed a motion for a new trial for Avery, and you are saying that based on current law, unless some new evidence is discovered, the courts probably would not be granting a new trial.
I don't know if she filed it yet. I know Avery, before she was on, filed something that I don't know the basis was very strong, but she has said she'll be filing a motion. She has essentially, you know, announced to the press that he's innocent and she's going to get him acquitted, you know, number whatever in her list of victories.
I'd just like to get your reaction to NBC has this report. This is just recently. Tens of thousands of people have signed petitions for Avery to be exonerated in the killing of Teresa Halbach. The White House previously pointed out that President Obama cannot pardon Avery because he was not convicted of a federal crime. And Governor Walker indicated earlier this month that he would not issue a pardon either. Governor Walker posted on Twitter earlier this month that viewers of Making a Murderer should read the unanimous opinion of the Court of Appeals before jumping to conclusions. What's your reaction?
Well, I don't think many viewers are going to want to read a boring court decision. Sorry. I think they would find out a lot, but I'm just being realistic. I don't think Governor Walker suggestion is gonna be taken up. The sentiment is right on, though. I mean, what he's saying by that is, find out the facts, the complete facts. Don't just rely on this. And I think you can look further if you really want to, than a legal opinion. That probably does. I shouldn't speak that way. I think it was a pretty long opinion affirming Judge Fox in our county, his decision on the Avery case and the Dassey case, and maybe affirming, I think there's another one, affirming Judge Willis's post-conviction decision. So I think Governor Walker's got a great point, the general point. Look into it. Don't just rely on what the documentary, Making a Murderer, has to say. I just don't know that that's too realistic that folks are going to do that. But the point is great. I think he's right.
Let's go to Cynthia now in Madison. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. The thing I want to point out is I'm just really – it's interesting hearing your guest there talking about the case and how everything seems to be getting mushier and mushier when really – I think the focus should be on the fact that Stephen Avery was wrongfully convicted the first time. What follows after that is just, it's a tragedy whether he actually did it or not. And I am here to tell you that there is no justice in the justice system and it needs to be reformed. I learned firsthand that you can be legally harassed in this country. I learned that firsthand, and it's very unfortunate.
And Cynthia, I'm sorry for that. I don't think we want to veer off into details of what you're referring to there. However, I do want Michael Griesbach, what lessons do we learn about the criminal justice system? What still needs to be examined based on this case?
Well, I think the call is right on, first of all. I mean, the first case gets lost in the shuffle, even in the deck, the Making a Murderer. I think it's one episode. My book, and I'm not trying to be self-promoting here, but the book that I wrote, two-thirds of it, the first two-thirds, has to do with the wrongful conviction. Detailed account of how I can reach the conclusion that I've not shied away from and other people have reached too. Caveat, AG's report, the conclusion says not so. But so she's right. I mean, that's, in a way, the story. This should have been a story long ago. And those people at that time, had they been held accountable, and I'm not talking about criminal prosecutions or, official this or that, but just if they recognized, and the media, frankly, looked into it further and recognized what an injustice was perpetrated upon Mr. Avery, maybe none of this would have happened. So that's why I say a lot of it's white noise is probably a little strong. But, we're talking about minutiae, not whether he's guilty or not. That's not minutiae. But, I mean, we're talking about so many issues in all this, and lost are the real people that suffered, including, further back, the woman in Green Bay and Stephen Avery himself and Penny Burnson, the victim of the first crime, who's had to revisit this I don't know how many times, and who has turned a tragedy, what would have destroyed some people's lives. I mean, she was nearly killed on the beach. Yeah, she's turned that into a mission to serve. She's worked in restorative justice programs. She has worked in prisons. She has spoken about wrongful convictions. She's volunteered at the Northwestern University's Center on Wrongful Convictions, her time and talent in Chicago. And this woman, if there's a kind of a pole star in this whole thing, it's Penny right. Burnson and the Halbach family.
And I got to leave it there because we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Michael Griesbach is the author of The Innocent Killer, A True Story of a Wrongful Conviction and Its Astonishing Aftermath, prosecuting attorney for Manitowoc County since 1991. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing and directing the program. This is the Ideas Network.